Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Hello. Last week on The Spot, I shared with you stories about goodbyes. And when I listened to each story, it really reminded me that any tale of a goodbye is also the story of a hello. That greeting had to, at some point, come before the farewell in question, and hellos usually pop up afterwards, too, sometimes when we least expect them to, and when, maybe, we aren't really ready for it. On today's show, you'll hear some incredible stories of hellos, starting with one about a common device for capturing sonic greetings, voicemail. There's a woman right here in the Bay Area who wants you to leave a message on her voicemail, and the podcast, Everything Sounds, is here to tell us more.
I'm Craig Shank.
I'm George Drake Jr., and this is Everything Sounds. There's this phone number that you can call, and instead of somebody answering, someone tells you to leave a message. And that someone is a woman in the Bay Area named Olga.
Sure, my name is Olga Nunes. I am a singer and a musician.
The idea is quite simple. You call a number, and it doesn't ring. No one asks you how they can direct your call. There's no hold music. It's an answering machine. Olga comes on and briefs you of what she wants you to do.
Sometimes, hearing a song will bring you back to the summer you were 16 and someone first kissed you.
But the condensed version is that I'm asking people, you know, when the last time was that a sense memory of some kind, a sense of smell, a sight, a sound, a song, triggered a memory. And where were they, and what was it like, and how did it feel? There's sort of a lead-in. There's sort of almost like a seduction of, you know, what about this? What about this? What about this? When you listen to the voicemail, that walks you through these feelings. So by the time you actually get to the beep, you already have something on the tip of your tongue to share.
Feel free to say your name and where you are in the world, or feel free to remain anonymous. Tell me your story at the beep.
So far, she thinks that 600 to 700 people have called and left messages, and all of these messages, with the exclusion of a few that were unpostable, have been put online for anyone to listen to.
Out of all of the messages she's received and listened to, there's one that not only stuck out in her mind, but it's also made its fair share of rounds on the internet.
It involves a guy and a shoebox that he found in the room that he grew up in at his parents' house.
And you can tell that, you know, he'd been a while out of school. And he'd had a bunch of relationships and, you know, he'd gone back to his parents' house and he found a shoebox basically under his bed with his first girlfriend's perfume in it.
There wasn't much left in the bottle, enough for maybe one more spray, but I opened the cap and the smell just filled me with a sucker punch to the stomach, basically, and just collapsed.
And he starts out and he tells, you know, he says his name, he says where he is. When he takes out the shoebox, he says, you know, this is the girl and I'm surrounded by her and it's like I can't escape her.
And I just stayed there. I just kind of stayed there. And I closed my eyes and almost as though closing my eyes that it would keep that memory where it was. Almost as though my closing my eyes would make sure that it wouldn't go away.
At the very end of the message, he says, you know, actually, can you take my name out of that and her name too? Because on second thought, I don't actually want to share that much.
I know I gave my name and everything, but if you could please just put me as anonymous from Princeton, New Jersey, and don't include her name. Just make up a name. Awesome. I think this is a really cool idea. Good luck with you and your project.
And it's part of the magic of not knowing the question beforehand is that you're kind of caught off guard, and so you're definitely revealing way more personal stuff than you ever would otherwise. Because usually the memory that hits the most strongly are really emotionally poignant things that they're carrying around.
You can learn more about Olga Nunes, along with her album Lamp, and This Is a Memory Of Project, from our website, everythingsounds.org. There you can also find some of our favorite examples of the messages left on the answering machine, as well as a link to listen to the hundreds of others.
Until next time, this has been Everything Sounds. I'm Craig Shank.
And I'm George Drake Jr.
Our next story is also about a bottle found on the East Coast and capable of sending its finder back in time. In 2001, a child named Sidonia Ferry wrote a message, stuffed it into a bottle, and threw it into the water. Her mother, Mimi, takes it from there.
We used to go visit my friend in Patchogue, Long Island, and her daughters are approximately the same age, and they would go off in a day, and apparently they threw many bottles, but this is the only bottle that came back.
Hurricane Sandy crashing on shore, winds now at 90 miles per hour.
We're essentially inside the storm, Diane. It is just to our south. We're easily getting
this storm is so big, so vast, 60 million Americans will feel its power.
Bottles, cans, garbage, wood, car pods, anything that you can think of was washed up. I mean, it probably was like 2 feet high worth of debris. And I heard one of the female workers say, oh, I found this bottle. It's got a note in it. I didn't see the phone number until we opened up took the letter out of the bottle, and then we saw the number. It was a 212 number, Manhattan.
It was in December 2012. On my phone, I always have my daughter's picture at age 18. And that day, I had changed it to 10 because she has this big smile and she's walking on the street. So when I came home, there was a message on my machine.
I told Mimi when I left a message with her that, you know, who I am and, you know, who I work for, and we found the ginger ale bottle. I read the note to her on the phone, and it said Bill and Ted's Great Adventure from the 1989 movie, and it said, be excellent to yourself, dude. I didn't realize how old the movie was because I didn't see the movie from 1989. The younger guys had to tell me about the movie.
This man says, oh, we found a bottle on the beach, and it says, be excellent to yourself, dude, and it gave your phone number. And they were laughing, these two men, so they thought it was like something random.
I would say at least 3 hours later, she left a message on my phone. I called her back when I got home, and she was just very frantic on the phone. She was just, you could hardly understand this. She was crying. I didn't realize how long the bottle was in the water until Mimi told me it was in the water for at least 10 or 11 years. So when she told me, then I really like couldn't believe that the bottle didn't break.
The message is from a movie called Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure that Sidonie liked. It's actually about time travel.
Now, a motion picture so grand, so magnificent, and so vast, it spans 7,000 years.
No way! Yes, way!
In the movie, they say be excellent to each other, but she changed it to be excellent to yourself, dude.
Bill and Ted's
Excellent! Excellent!
Excellent Adventure.
Because it was the year of 2001, after the World Trade Center. I think it was a very hard year for her since she's born 9/11 and being of French and Persian origin. I think she had a hard time in New York explaining that having a double citizenship and having a mother who's from Middle East doesn't make her against everything. Last year of high school, she was very unhappy here. So I took her to a boarding school in Switzerland. On April 23rd, they went on this unauthorized picnic on top of a mountain. And there were no signs that it was dangerous and you couldn't climb down and walk around because there were lots of kids walking around. She walked down with this other boy, and they just fell.
She was telling me about the whole story, and then I was like, wow, I have a child of my own. So it hit me. Then I realized. Then I came in the house, and I told my wife, and my wife kind of didn't believe it either. And then when she was sending pictures of the daughter and the movie and all that. So then I started to, you know, realize that, you know, it was a tragic story.
My God, I mean, it's something unbelievable. You can't imagine having a message sort of from beyond. This message came after her death, 2 years after her death. Something in your daughter's handwriting and her sense of humor, I knew it was from her.
A day or two later, she met me at the Patchogue train station. She got off the train. She was crying. She had a picture of her daughter. She brought gifts. And so we were all in the Patchogue train station in the parking lot with my bosses, with the FEMA guy. And we were just like all huddling around. And we all went down to the beach club. So I was kind of like holding her arm. You know, she was like in high heels and a dress. So I was kind of like holding on to her so she wouldn't like fall, you know, in the sand. So we walked out on the beach club and showed her the exact spot that we found it. And we were taking a couple of pictures. And that was it.
He's very nice. He keeps texting me. He came to visit with his family and gave me a picture of Sidonie with a poem that his daughter wrote.
You know, I told her when we saw her at the train station that we'd be friends, you know, forever now. And she did say to me that, you know, I feel like Sidonie wanted you to find the bottle that day. And I said it too. I said, you know, I feel that in my heart that she wanted me to make the call that day.
Those were the voices of Mimi Ferry and Brian Waldron. That's probably the 20th time I've listened to that story, and it still never fails to give me goosebumps. It was produced by Eleanor McDowell and originally aired in 2014 on Shortcuts, a BBC Radio 4 program that features new short documentaries from all around the world. Listen to more episodes of Shortcuts on their podcast feed, available on iTunes and on your other podcatchers of choice. Also, for those of you on the hunt for more audio documentaries, Falling Tree Productions, where Shortcuts is made, creates radio documentaries all year long, and I recommend checking out all of their work at www.fallingtree.co.uk. You're tuned to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best stories from indie radio producers and podcasts. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. It seems so impossible that a small bottle found its way past rocks that could have smashed it and waves that could have sunk it and delivered its message to an audience of one, inspiring a connection and then friendship between two people who otherwise probably wouldn't have met. That sort of confidentiality isn't really a part of broadcasting. With radio, it's about sending a message out to a wide audience, knowing that many people are catching it and hopefully creating their own connections through it. I don't know about you, but for me, when I'm listening to the radio at home, I sometimes forget that I'm not the only listener. And when Pat Herbert heard a radio broadcast for the very first time, it literally lit up his life.
Everywhere was in darkness. We didn't have any electricity. Very little candles even. It was after the war and oil was rationed. If you could get the oil, you mightn't have the money to buy it. The All-Ireland football final was being played outside of Ireland for the first and only time. And this was the occasion. I didn't realise it at the time. And it was played in the Polo Grounds in New York and being broadcast into Ireland. There we were, out in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden, word spread to the adjoining villages that neighbours of ours had acquired what was called a wireless.
I look down on this scene of splendor, the crowd and team do honor to the national anthem.
The house was a little cottage and it was full with adults. I can tell you there was not any room for any more.
falls to the ground. He passes it out to Dan Kavanagh.
The place was full, outside and inside. We as children had to stay out in the front garden. It was about 9 or 10 o'clock at night in September, and of course, pitch darkness everywhere. Except for this little radio in the corner on the windowsill. And it lit up the valves, the bulbs in the radio, lit up the place with artificial light, with batteries. It was the first time I saw artificial light, and it lit up the kitchen of the house. Everywhere else was in darkness, right around, everywhere, countryside, all in darkness. You can imagine a youngster, everybody was scared of the dark. And all of a sudden you saw this artificial lighting. I always believed it was when I first saw the light. Little magic eye. Yeah, magic eye. We call it magic eye, it's the green eye. I couldn't visualize this, how this could come all the way from New York into a cottage in the west of Ireland, over a few thousand miles, and no wires. And I was mystified, and I think it damaged my brain, and that's why I'm talking to you here now.
Do you think it damaged you?
Oh, definitely. Oh, absolutely.
How?
Yeah. I'm surrounded with all these damn things, hundreds of them, hundreds of them.
What must have been his feelings at this supreme moment?
Is the light burning yet?
Yep. Clear and bright, thank heaven.
The tremendous expanse of ocean had been bridged. Continents would speak with each other of their several aspirations. A ship in distress in the perilous wastes of the seas could be succored. Lovers separated by a hemisphere would confer privily and be comforted. Empire builders isolated in desert and jungle would hear the sounds of their cities and be cheered and refreshed. A new world would be born.
And that's how it all began for me, you know. You heard of Hertz. In the 1880s, he discovered those waves in the atmosphere. They're called after him, Hertzian waves. They're called the radio waves now. They've been there from the beginning of time, but nobody knew. Now, that's where it all began. I don't know where it's going to end. There's a great big universe out there. We really don't know so little about it, the future, you know. But that's the past. Yeah.
How are you going, mate?
How are you, Joe?
How are you?
Now.
That was Pat Herbert, who is also the founder of the Hurdy Gurdy Radio Museum, which can be found in a tower in Dublin, Ireland. And yes, it's filled with old radios. The story was produced by Rika Hood, and it was commissioned by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's RN unit. This last piece is an audio window into the life of Bill Picard, a motivational speaker who isn't able to make connections with others using his own voice. Bill's story reminds me that there's more ways to say hello than just saying the word. Here's radio producer Matt Largy.
When Bill Picard was 16, he and his grandmother wrote down the five things he most wanted to do in his life. Be independent, graduate from college, have a meaningful career, buy his own house, and finally find a serious relationship and get married. Kind of typical American dream type stuff, right? Well, maybe for most of us, but Bill isn't exactly your typical American. Bill can't walk. He can't stand up. He can't use his hands, and he can't speak. Bill was born with cerebral palsy, or CP. It's a neurological disorder that's left him with little control of his body. Here's Bill.
I am Bill Picard, and I have spasticity cerebral palsy.
With spasticity cerebral palsy, your muscles are always working, so your metabolism is always higher. That means I can eat anything I want and won't gain weight. Ha, ha, ha.
Bill uses a computer mounted on his wheelchair to type out what he's trying to say. He can only type about 10 words a minute, so what you just heard was prepared ahead of time. When he's not using the computer, Bill sounds like this. One more thing. Bill's also a motivational speaker.
I speak about life's many challenges. Today, I am going to share some of my life experiences to give a deeper understanding of people who are different from most others.
It's been 18 years since Bill wrote the list with his grandmother. At 34, he's crossed off at least two items on his list. He's graduated from college with a business degree and owns an apartment building in Lewiston, where he rents out rooms, mostly to students at the local college. He lives by himself here on the first floor of the building. The apartment's dark, sparsely decorated. The hallways are wide and the furniture is spaced far apart so Bill can get his wheelchair around. He's brushing his teeth and getting ready for the day with one of his personal care assistants, Eddie Gray Fox.
The most exciting part of the day, brushing your teeth.
Because of his CP, Bill needs help. A lot of help. His muscles don't always do what he wants them to. It's gotten progressively worse since he was a child.
The only time Bill can't motivationally speak to me.
Eddie has to help Bill do everything from taking a shower to eating breakfast to drinking a glass of water.
So we would get up around 10 o'clock. If there's a speech, then generally that means we have to get up earlier. Bill generally has a shower. After that, he has cereal, and we start talking about whatever we're going to do for today, and then we have to look at getting to wherever it is we need to go.
Outside, Eddie opens up the wheelchair lift on the passenger side of Bill's big white van. After Bill's settled in the back, Eddie puts on the hazard lights and backs out of the driveway.
Bill needs to go and talk to Elizabeth Combs, who is a Volk rehab counselor, about his business and what he's done so far and what he needs. And... Huh, Bill?
Yeah.
Recently, Bill decided to start his own nonprofit company so he can work as a motivational speaker full time. Right now, he's looking for funding to start the business. The speaking's only been sort of a side project since he started doing it about 10 years ago. He got it started after taking a speech class in college.
At some point, you realize what you enjoy doing. For me, it was the first time I got up and spoke in front of a group. I really enjoyed that experience, so I started to do more in my spare time.
Not long after, a professor at the university invited Bill to come speak to her education class. Soon, Bill was getting paid for his speaking. Here's Bill's dad, Roy Picard.
It was something he could do that people just clammed up and listened to him. There's something about Billy and that mechanical voice. When he gets in front of a group and starts speaking with that, he gets everybody's attention.
After people get to know someone with disabilities, they don't see the disabilities as much and begin to feel comfortable with them.
I've seen him speak, and it's really great because he's very good with an audience, which is strange because he can't talk to them.
That's Bill's best friend, Zach Lamprin.
His eyes do a lot of talking for him. There's still passion in the speech because of the way it's written and the way he looks when he's giving it.
Bill and Eddie arrive at the Career Center in Auburn, which is part of the State Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. The agency helps disabled people learn new job skills and find work.
So the issue is...
In the meeting, the counselor seems skeptical of the prospects of making money doing motivational speaking. She points out that most public schools, where Bill would be most likely to speak, often have very tight budgets and may not be able to afford to pay for the speeches. Outside after the meeting, Bill's disappointed and angry that things didn't go the way he planned.
What do you think? You think it's what, the rules? Everything?
But as they drive away, they both seem to shrug off the warnings.
Life has many challenges, but it is how you deal with these challenges are what form you into the person you are going to be.
It's hard to know what to think or how to act when you're around Bill. Even though his movements are spastic and you might think he's not capable of social interaction, His eyes say different. When you meet him, he makes eye contact and he holds it. And you can tell, he really wants to talk to you.
Baby back pork ribs.
Here, in the Hannaford supermarket in Auburn, engaging other people isn't really an option. People avoid him in the aisles. Children stare as he and Eddie decide which can of sliced peaches to buy.
A big one?
It is really too bad that most people have no idea how people get cerebral palsy or what this is. I think of myself as being a regular person who needs help once in a while. This is what I want people to think of me as, a person, not someone with a disability.
But it seems most people don't think of him that way. And that makes meeting his fifth goal, getting married, kind of complicated.
Marie 9106, please. Marie 106, thank you. Put this down.
About a year ago, Bill made a date through an online personal service, but he called it off. He says he doesn't remember why, but Zach says he does.
He doesn't feel that someone could look past his exterior and just love him for who he is. And I'm sad for him for that. Because, I mean, Bill is such a great guy. He's fully capable of finding someone to appreciate him, but getting him to believe that is very difficult. You're trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're trying. But then you call off the dates. And you sabotage yourself. You say how, you tell everybody how confident you are, how great your life is, and then really deep inside, you don't feel that all of that is worth what it really is.
Be independent. Graduate from college. Have a meaningful career. Buy a house. Find a serious relationship and get married. That might sound like a lot for someone as severely handicapped as Bill, but he doesn't let his disability stop him.
He compares himself with other people earning a living. And I had the education, and I've got to be able to do more.
Again, Bill's dad, Roy Picard.
And I'm trying to get him to realize that there's still a lot of value for what he's been able to do. So I don't want to quell his dreams. But sometimes I wonder whether we instilled too many, made him feel, yes, like you can feel anything that anybody else feels, and you got to have some dreams. But he actually bought in that he could do everything that anybody else can do.
And maybe that's why Bill's done so much of what he set out to do 20 years ago. As for what remains, well, he'll keep working on that.
The only difference between you and me is that I need help to do things that I want to do, and I look a little different. I think this goes for a lot of people who have disabilities. People just do not realize that we have goals and ambitions in our lives, too.
For Salt Radio, I'm Matt Largy.
This story is over 10 years old now, but you can find out Bill's current progress towards reaching his 5 goals on a recent video update. We have a link to it on KALW.org, and you can find more short documentaries at salt.edu.
Hello, hello. I like your smile.
That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at KALW.org. Also, if you didn't get to hear last week's episode on goodbyes, now is a perfect time to check it out. I'd love to hear about the podcasts and radio stories that you love. Send them in an email to thespot@kalw.org. And tune in next Sunday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.